You're listening to a National Law Enforcement Roadway Safety Program podcast. The National Law Enforcement Roadway Safety Program is funded through grants from the Bureau of Justice Assistance, BJA, Office of Justice Programs, U.S. Department of Justice, in collaboration with the National Policing Institute and the Institute for Intergovernmental Research. The points of view and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the podcast authors and do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. Here's your host.
Thank you for joining us today. My name's Richard Hudson. I'm an officer with the Grapevine Police Department in Texas. I have over 27 years of law enforcement experience. On behalf of the National Law Enforcement Roadway Safety Program, I want to welcome you today to today's podcast on law enforcement roadway safety. Our guest today is David Flory, a 36-year veteran of law enforcement, having served as a police chief in both Bedford, Texas and Hot Springs, Arkansas. He's a full-time lead instructor in the BJA Valor Officer Safety and Wellness Program, as well as a program advisor and instructor for the National Law Enforcement Roadway Safety Program. Welcome, David.
Hey, thanks, RJ, and good day to you and all of our listeners out there.
David, as we start this podcast, I was hoping you could briefly introduce our listeners to the National Law Enforcement Roadway Safety Program.
Yeah, sure, RJ, I'd be happy to. The National Law Enforcement Roadway Safety Program, or the acronym NLRS, provides no-cost training, technical assistance, and resources to local, state, and tribal law enforcement agencies. The goal of the program is to reduce the number of law enforcement officers injured and killed on the roadways through collisions and struck-by instances.
There's a great need for a program like that, David. Far too often, we hear about officers that were killed in a crash or struck on the side of the road.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, RJ. And, you know, as you know, from time to time as a police officer yourself in Texas, officer deaths due to vehicle-related instances, like you said, like car crashes and officer struck-by instances, are really one of the leading causes of on-duty deaths every single year, just behind felonious assaults. RJ, we have to take a look at all aspects of this law enforcement career. Are these practices that are passing from one generation of officers to another? I personally think that there's lots of myths out there that need to be dispelled when we talk about roadway safety. If we address some of these myths, we can encourage officers to look at their own practices and in doing so become safer on America's roadways.
You're right, David. Let's drill down on some of those myths. We know a lot about how accidents are caused when other drivers don't hear our sirens. What are the myths there?
Yeah, most officers assume that the driving public hears us, but really they don't. To be effective, a siren needs to be heard by a road user early enough for the road user to be able to respond appropriately to the emergency vehicle, usually by yielding the right-of-way. The problem is many factors can keep a road user from hearing our siren until we're already right up on them. Things like car radios, the sound insulation in modern vehicles, cell phone conversations, and just general road noise can all mask the sound of your siren. So when we're traveling at higher speeds, by the time a motorist hears your siren above all other noise in the world, they might not be having any time to react to you. This is what we often refer to as outrunning of your siren. This is why when you need motorists to yield the right-of-way to you, particularly at intersections, you need to make sure you're traveling at a speed that allows motorists to hear you with enough time to react to you before you actually get to them or until you reach them. Another myth is that every person that flees is worth chasing. And actually, that's absolutely not true. We all know that we chase because they run. But in reality, the need to pursue and catch the offender, oftentimes, it's not worth the risk to the officer, the subject, and the driving public. For example, in a National Highway Traffic Safety Administration study from 1982 to 2020, over 6,000 bystanders and motorists were killed, and tens of thousands more were injured in vehicle pursuits. You know, we really need to weigh the benefits of immediate apprehension against the very real risk to officers and public safety. Another myth is that it's not important to conduct a thorough law enforcement vehicle check before we start every shift, such as checking the tire pressure in our tires. It is one of the single most important issues when talking about how a vehicle performs while under spirited driving conditions. Under and over inflated tires negatively affect the vehicle's handling and increase braking distance at times when you likely need peak performance of your vehicle. You need to check them. You just need to check them every shift. Most cars now have tire pressure monitoring systems, so check your tire pressure either manually or through the vehicle TPMS system.
David, what about sleep deprivation? I know that a lot of officers are working 12-hour shifts and then working off-duty jobs too. Is lack of sleep a problem?
You know, Richard, I really think that fatigue is the elephant in the room, if you will. And yes, there are two myths here. It's a myth to think that you can drive safely for your whole shift on only a few hours of sleep. We tend to think we can chew gum, sing out loud, play loud music, stretch, roll down the windows, etc., to help ourselves wake up. But science shows these things may make you feel a little bit better, but they don't actually reduce physical impairments caused by fatigue. The only way to reduce those impairments is to get sleep. There's a ton of research regarding sleep deprivation and fatigue and its correlation to reaction time and car crashes. With overnight shifts that disrupt our circadian rhythms, working overtime and extra jobs, etc., we have to face the fact that many officers are driving 4,000 to 6,000 pound police vehicles, often at high speeds, with very little sleep and compromised reaction times. The research actually shows that 19 hours without sleep has a similar effect of 0.05 blood alcohol content. And this is not just time on duty, but actual time awake between sleep. There's also a myth that you can catch up on your sleep on your days off. It's complicated, but the simple truth is you cannot. Research conducted in 2003 by Dr. Greg Belenke at Walter Reed showed that soldiers who were restricted in how much sleep they could get did not return to their normal level of performance immediately following the sleep restriction. In fact, they didn't get anywhere close, even though they had 3 recovery days following their restriction. The implication here is you can't slack on your sleep during your work week and expect to recover your peak performance over the next few days you have off. You won't be able to, and you'll start your next work week already fatigued. The solution is you have to have consistent sleep and rest, not just trying to catch up on your sleep. It helps when agencies have restorative rest policies that give officers the ability to go to a supervisor and let them know that they were up with a sick child or other things like that, family issues, and actually request an official rest break. It's different than what we've always done in the past. It's also encouraged to minimize 12-hour shifts with extra jobs.
Well, Dave, we have so many tools in our vehicles, cell phones, laptops, etc. They can really help us out in our day-to-day duties. What are your thoughts on this? Are there any myths about this?
Yeah, RJ, there are. And the myth is that you are paying attention as long as you have your eyes on the road, and that's not at all true. You could be looking at your windshield, but if you're consumed by the radio traffic, a cell phone conversation, or a personal matter, you are mentally or cognitively distracted. Attention is really a limited resource. So if you're thinking about anything other than hazard mitigation while you're driving, you aren't really paying attention to the road. You can have your eyes on the road and completely miss seeing something because your brain was distracted and didn't really process it. Everyone needs to remember that their ultimate goal when they're driving is to get where they're going and do it safely. So make sure you're actually focused on seeing and predicting roadway hazards. Another myth is that the other drivers on the road are paying attention and will see you on the side of the road. Definitely a myth. If you aren't wearing a reflective vest, there's a good chance approaching motorists can see your emergency vehicle, but they may not be able to see you. And that's if the approaching motorists are even paying proper attention to the roadway. We all know that a significant portion of drivers are distracted. They are texting, talking on their cell phones, or doing something else that is taking their attention away from the roadway. And then there's that impaired driver, these people that are under the influence of drugs, alcohol, or sometimes even both. Combine all of them with drowsy drivers, and a significant portion of the driving public may never even realize you're in their driving path until it's way too late. Richard, that is why it's so important to use blocking vehicles and stay as far away from the active roadway as possible in order to reduce the likelihood that you'll be struck. If you haven't already, I highly recommend you get trained on traffic incident management. You can find this training online through the Federal Highway Administration or through the Emergency Responders Safety Institute. This training can change the way you operate on the roadway for the better and make you safer.
David, what about seatbelts? I know that there are myths in this area as well. Can you dispel these myths and talk about training officers so they can wear their seatbelts and still exit their vehicles efficiently?
Yeah, RJ, it's really shocking to see and hear the lengths that officers will go to in order to avoid wearing seatbelts because of the myth and misinformation. I have actually seen officers who buy aftermarket seatbelt devices that clip into the seatbelt in order to disable the audible alarm in the car, or they wear it behind their back, or other workarounds that I've seen in my career. But really, pure and simple, seatbelts do prevent injuries and deaths. We know that empirically from the research. Yet I continue to hear myths about seatbelt use. The most common is probably, well, I don't want to be trapped in my car, is what they say. Well, RJ, if you're going to be trapped in your car during a wreck, it'll be because the car is so damaged you can't get out of it anyway. If the vehicle suffered that much damage, the seatbelt likely will save your life. Quite frankly, when the fire department personnel get there to extract you, cutting the seatbelt to get you out will be the least of their concerns. Another one I hear is that officers think that not wearing a seatbelt will prevent them from being stuck in their car if they get ambushed, or will allow them to get out of the car faster in case of a foot chase. Well, what we know, especially from a field trial done by Montgomery County Police Department in Maryland, is that with minimal training and practice, officers can get out of their vehicle just as quickly with a seatbelt on. We know that the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, or FLETC, teaches a technique of, quote, swimming out of your seatbelt, whereby you place your left hand, if you're driving, under the seatbelt, unbuckle it, and make a swimming motion toward the driver's window, which gets the seatbelt out of your way quickly. And I've seen this in practice. I've seen it in training. And with training and practice, you can get out of your seatbelt very, very quickly. The risk of injury, even at slow speeds, far outweighs the need to get out quickly because of ambush or impending foot chases. The numbers show that many officers die each year due to car crashes while not wearing seatbelts or getting ejected from their vehicles more often than they do getting ambushed while sitting in their vehicle because they can't get out of their seatbelt quick enough. In this case, the numbers just don't support the argument. And when it comes to engaging in foot chases, what we know is that they are very high on emotions and very low on tactics. And quite frankly, slowing down a bit, setting up a perimeter, and calling for additional resources is more likely to result in apprehension and definitely reduces assaults on officers who are ambushed while rounding the corner chasing someone. I had an officer here in Hot Springs, Arkansas, killed that way 3 years ago after conducting a foot chase. He was ambushed by a suspect who was waiting for him around the corner of a house.
David, can you explain what we mean by the phrase, be quick, but don't hurry? And does this concept apply here?
The whole concept of be quick, don't hurry gives us a mental picture of the difference between rushing and making mistakes and slowing down just a bit to be safe. So how it applies here is the myth that driving faster with, say, lights and sirens results in more apprehensions. That's the myth. The truth is more suspects are gone from the scene before we ever arrive to, quote, in-progress calls. I've heard veteran officers say, I've been in law enforcement for more than 20 years and I've never had a wreck, so I won't have one today. Well, we don't want a bad decision to catch up with you. Many of the officers and students that I have known have been involved in at least one or more collisions during their career. What I encourage people to do is don't make it where your one crash is a fatal one. So RJ, as you can see, there are a lot of myths out there. I hope with this short podcast, we've dispelled at least several of them.
Thank you, David. Thank you for sharing this very important information and tips explaining many myths associated with law enforcement and officers wearing their seatbelts. I want to encourage our listeners to visit our website at leoroadwaysafety.org. There you'll find additional information on the National Law Enforcement Roadway Safety Program, training, technical assistance, and other resources. Thank you for listening, and please be safe.
The National Law Enforcement Roadway Safety Program is dedicated to providing training and technical assistance to state, local, and tribal law enforcement agencies with the goal of reducing the number of officers injured or killed on the nation's roadways. For additional information regarding the program, please visit leoroadwaysafety.org. That's leoroadwaysafety.org. Or send us an email at tta@leoroadwaysafety.org. The Bureau of Justice Assistance, BJA, and the Office of Justice Programs, U.S. Department of Justice, is committed to making our nation's communities safer by developing programs and resources and providing grant funding opportunities to support state, local, territorial, and tribal criminal justice efforts. All are available at no cost. Please visit www.bja.gov to learn more. This project was supported by grant number 2018 DPBX-K005, awarded by the Bureau of Justice Assistance. The Bureau of Justice Assistance is a component of the U.S. Department of Justice's Office of Justice Programs, which also includes the Bureau of Justice Statistics, the National Institute of Justice, the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, the Office for Victims of Crime, and the Office of Sex Offender Sentencing, Monitoring, Apprehending, Registering, and Tracking, or SMART. Points of view or opinions are those of the author and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice.